This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and online at kexp.org. Our guest this morning is Jay Bolus, Executive Vice President, Benchmarking and Certification for MBDC, a product and process design firm dedicated to revolutionizing the design of products and services worldwide and founded on the cradle-to-cradle design paradigm and the implementation of eco-effective design principles. Jay is here to tell us about cradle-to-cradle design and how it can be used to create products that nourish rather than harm both society and the natural environment. Welcome, Jay.
Thank you. Good morning, Diane.
Could you begin by defining or explaining cradle-to-cradle design?
Well, I think cradle-to-cradle design is essentially about two things. It's about using those materials that are truly safe for human and environmental health. And it's also about designing products in a way that facilitates the recovery and reuse of those materials, either through true recycling or through safe composting and returning those materials back to nature. Now, there's three sort of additional subsets, if you will, to cradle to cradle. Those are the two main points. But beyond that, it's doing those things in a way that maximizes the use of renewable energy, provides stewardship over the watershed, and manufactures products in a socially responsible way.
Could you elaborate on how cradle-to-cradle design is different from what's sometimes called cradle-to-grave design?
Yeah, traditional design and manufacturing, at least in this country for a long time, has been a very linear process, thus the term cradle-to-grave. And really what that means is you extract the resources, you convert those resources into materials, you assemble products with those materials, you use those products, and then they get disposed of in a landfill or incinerator. So it's a one-way flow from cradle extraction to grave, the landfill or incinerator.
How did cradle-to-cradle design come about? What is the origin of this concept?
Well, MBDC stands for McDonough-Brongard Design Chemistry, and our two principals are Bill McDonough, who's an architect and designer, and Michael Brongard, who's a German chemist, started the Greenpeace Division of Chemistry in Germany. And they came together and decided to really create a new paradigm for how products should be designed and created. Bill came at it from the aesthetic design approach. Michael came at it from the actual material chemistry, what things are made of. And together they came up with this concept of cradle to cradle, keeping things essentially in what they call closed loops or metabolisms of either industry or nature.
Could you go into more detail about how a product that's been designed for cradle-to-cradle be different from a product that was designed for cradle-to-grave?
Sure. First of all, we hope that the product that was designed for cradle-to-cradle is using chemicals and materials that are safe for human environmental health. And that's the most important thing because most manufacturers that make products don't even know what's in them. So the first difference is the cradle-to-cradle manufacturer, A, knows what's in the product, and B, knows that it's safe for humans and the environment. And then secondly, the cradle-to-cradle manufacturer will manufacture his or her product in a way that it's easily disassemblable and truly recyclable or able to be composted in a municipal or residential compost pile.
Could you also elaborate more on the difference between recycling and downcycling?
Sure, that's a good question. Unfortunately, most recycling that goes on today is actually downcycling. And what we mean by that is it's taking a material that has a certain level of inherent value and using it for a product that has inherently lower value. So in essence, it's taking something like a soda bottle or a piece of a chair and using it to make a flower pot or a speed bump, and then eventually that product goes into the landfill. What we consider true recycling is actually using something, again, at the same level of value or quality for which it was originally intended. So making new bottles out of old bottles or making new chairs out of old chairs or taking a car bumper and making a new car bumper or another component at a similar level of quality.
How practical is it to do that? Wouldn't you run into some problems just from a practical point of view?
Yeah, I think, you know, that's true, and what we try to do is open it up to the entire industry. So instead of saying, yes, you actually have to make a new bumper out of this old bumper, if we can keep it either in the auto industry or in an industry that's using materials at sort of a similar level of quality, then we would consider that to be recycling. It doesn't actually have to be product into product into product of the same kind over and over again, but at a similar level of value and use.
Could you now explain how eco-efficiency is different from eco-effectiveness, which is the eco-effectiveness, of course, is what you emphasize.
Exactly. Eco-efficiency tends to say, let's try to do more with less. So in other words, if we are producing hazardous substances as a byproduct, let's try and reduce the amount of hazardous stuff we're putting in the world. Let's reduce our environmental footprint. Let's try to reduce our energy use. It's really about reduction. It's reduce, reduce, reduce. And that will definitely help improve the environmental situation in the short run. Ultimately, it doesn't change the situation. Analogy we use is if you're trying to drive to Florida and you start out in D.C. going north, slowing down from 80 miles an hour to 20 miles an hour won't help you get to Florida, but it will help you turn your car around. So eco-efficiency will help you get on the eco-effective track, but it won't ultimately get you your goal.
Could you say more and give a specific example? For example, if I were a manufacturer of T-shirts, how would I approach designing my product to make it eco-effective rather than just eco-efficient?
Okay. Actually, I'd love to use a textile example to answer that question. There was a mill in Switzerland called Rohner that we worked with a few years back, and they were making a textile product, and they were having some problems with the trimmings of that product. It was considered hazardous waste, and they had to dispose of it in a different country. So the eco-efficiency solution to that problem would have been, well, how can we generate less waste? The eco-effective solution to that problem was to re-examine the reason why they were generating hazardous waste, and it was because the dyes and auxiliaries that they were using were problematic. So we changed the formulation. We brought them dyes and auxiliaries that were approved and were safe for human and environmental health. And after that, the trimmings were no longer considered hazardous waste. In fact, they were actually beneficial because it was a biodegradable fabric. They became mulch for the local garden club, and that issue went away.
Could you say a few words about the concept of waste equals food?
Sure. And it actually, earlier I mentioned that Bill and Michael envisioned products being designed for one or two metabolisms, either the technical back to industry or the biological back to nature. And essentially, that's what waste equals food means. Every product or byproduct of your system becomes food for another product or system. So if you're in the technical metabolism, all of your byproducts become materials for a different product or technical metabolism. And if you're in the biological, all of your products or byproducts become food for nature. So there really isn't waste. Everything becomes an input to some other system or process.
Could you now speak about your cradle-to-cradle design protocol that you use at MBDC to assess materials used in products and production processes? What are the criteria you use in your protocol?
Okay, we've got five sets of criteria. The first set deals with the material health question. So how do we determine whether something is indeed safe for human and environmental health? And we have 19 specific criteria that deal with that issue. 10 of them pertain to human health, and 9 of them pertain to environmental health. And they're typical toxicological measures like carcinogenicity, does it cause cancer, does it cause gene mutation, does it cause endocrine system disruption. On the environmental side, we look at how it impacts air, soil, and water. So does it cause aquatic toxicity? Is it an air pollutant? Is it biodegradable, bioaccumulative, persistent, those sorts of things. The second set of criteria deal with the ability of a product or material to be recycled or safely composted. So that deals with issues like, is the product designed for disassembly? Are the materials recyclable in theory, or is it actually being done? Is the product considered biodegradable or safely compostable? Those sorts of questions get answered there. Our third set of criteria deal with energy use. And we look at the quantity of energy, but also the quality of the energy. So are you using renewable energy or buying renewable energy certificates, those sorts of things to power your process. The fourth set of criteria revolve around water issues. So are you a good steward of your watershed? What sorts of water emissions are you putting out into the world? Are you using more than your fair share of water based on where you're situated geographically? And then the final set deals with social issues. Things like corporate ethics, you know, are you manufacturing your product and behaving appropriately in the community and also in the world in general? Are you treating all your employees fairly? Those sorts of things.
Could you give a specific example or two of products designed or redesigned with cradle-to-cradle principles in mind?
Sure. We spent a lot of time working with office furniture manufacturers, and one in particular, Steelcase, manufactured a chair, I guess it came out last year, called the Think Chair. And the first thing we did when working with them was to eliminate the problematic substances. So PVC, which is probably, from our perspective, one of the most problematic substances, was eliminated from the chair. The next thing we did was make sure it was designed for disassembly. So this chair, it's a very high-performing office chair, can be disassembled in less than 5 minutes with common hand tools that pretty much everybody has in their kitchen drawer. Not only can it be disassembled into those subcomponents, but all of those subcomponents are recyclable. So the chair is essentially 97% recyclable. The third thing we did was look at the energy mix and what energy was being used to manufacture the chair. How could we promote the use of renewable energy to manufacture it? There's no water used in the manufacture of the chair, so that really wasn't an issue. And then finally, we just examined sort of the social ethics of the corporation that was manufacturing it. Steelcase has done a lot of work around the whole corporate ethics piece and fair labor, so there really wasn't much to do there. So I'd say primarily it was around materials and the way those materials were assembled in the chair that made the difference.
Could you give an additional example?
Sure. There's a carpet product out, Shaw Industries manufactures. And again, the first thing we did, we always start with materials. Let's make sure that those are safe and acceptable for human environmental systems. So we looked at the fiber of the carpet. We looked at all the pigments and dyes that go into that carpet. We looked at the backing. And we recommended replacements where we found materials that were not suitable for human environmental health. And Shaw was able to replace most, or if not all, of the problematic substances. And they were also able to come up with a new backing for the carpet that is recyclable over and over again back into carpet. The face fiber is also recyclable back into face fiber, so you can literally take old carpet and make new carpet from it over and over again. And Shaw has actually gone one step further, and they have a toll-free number on the back of every carpet tile, and if you call that number, they will come pick up your carpet and make sure it does get recycled into new carpet.
I'm Diane Horn, and we are speaking with Jay Bolas, Executive Vice President, Benchmarking and Certification for MBDC, a product and process design firm dedicated to revolutionizing the design of products and services worldwide. Our topic is how cradle-to-cradle design can be used to create products that nourish rather than harm both society and the natural environment. What are the economic costs of making the transition to an eco-effective product? I'm sure it varies from one product to another, but could you give sort of a general impression?
It does, and that's a great question. That's usually the first question we get asked. And a lot of times, it's really hard to measure, because what happens is, on a material-by-material basis, typically when we recommend something that's safer for the environment or for the workers, it's a more expensive input, because if it was cheaper, they'd be using it already. So there's usually a cost there, but some of the things that don't get measured, sort of the indirect costs, are the fact that now the workers don't need protective equipment, and we oftentimes have eliminated hazardous substances from storage, so they don't need hazardous substance storage facilities. There are less worker sick days, so productivity increases. There's a lot of benefits that are hard to measure directly on the bottom line. But we have found that, in general, cradle-to-cradle products tend to be more profitable than the ones that aren't designed that way.
What are some of the most difficult challenges you've found in making products that are more eco-effective?
Probably the greatest challenge is understanding what is in the product to begin with. Because most manufacturers today, at least in this country, are not vertically integrated. They're buying components from not only this country, from Asia, and really all over the world. So trying to go down that supply chain and just figure out what's in the product to begin with is probably our biggest challenge. We can't improve the product until we know what's there to start with. So oftentimes it's easier for us to create a product from scratch, although most manufacturers want to improve a product that they're currently manufacturing.
How available are non-toxic or less toxic alternatives when toxicity is an issue? What have you found there?
Well, you know, it's interesting. We found that they're actually fairly readily available. We've had numerous situations where we've gone back to a material or chemical manufacturer and said, hey, you know, do you have a substitute for this toxic thing that you're currently selling? They say, sure, it's right here on the shelf. We just haven't sold it because nobody's asked for it. So so, you know, it's kind of interesting that once the demand is out there and perceived by the suppliers, they've got stuff ready to go.
Which types of products are easiest and hardest to apply the cradle-to-cradle philosophy to?
I think, really, it fits best with those simple and maybe moderately complex products, things that you see and touch every day, your carpets, your fabric, your chairs, your all your interior things, paints and coatings and those sorts of things. It gets a little bit more difficult when we get into those complex products like a television set or, you know, certainly an automobile or any other kind of electronic component, because there are just so many bits and pieces that go into those, it becomes a bit more difficult.
What are the business benefits for companies of cradle-to-cradle design?
Well, you know, we found a couple. I think, first and foremost, it's a way to distinguish yourself from your competition. As more and more consumers become aware of environmental and toxicity issues, it's certainly a big marketing advantage for you to say you've got a cradle-to-cradle product when your competitor does not. I think, you know, you can also raise the bar on your competition and set a new standard. And when regulation catches up with some of these issues, you're going to be all that much further ahead because you've already eliminated all your toxic stuff via cradle-to-cradle.
What have you found generally prompts companies to be interested in the cradle-to-cradle approach?
Well, there's been different drivers. You know, believe it or not, some companies just want to do the right thing. And we're all sort of a little bit cynical about that and find that hard to believe, but it's true. They're certainly in the minority. I would say the majority of companies look at it as competitive advantage. They see that the marketplace is looking for products that are green or sustainable, and they think they would have a big competitive advantage by developing and manufacturing cradle-to-cradle products.
Are there particular types of companies that seem most interested?
I think certainly in this country, companies that work in the A&D or architecture and design arena seem to be the most interested. Their customer base is very savvy about environmental issues. The U.S. Green Building Council and a lot of other organizations have helped promote the sort of awareness of green products. So I think they're probably leading the green movement as far as manufacturers go.
If you looked overall, what types of companies are representative that have come forward to your company or to other companies that may do this type of work?
We've worked with folks in the auto industry, in the base chemical industry. BASF is a big chemical manufacturer, and they've adopted cradle-to-cradle. Of course, the furniture folks we've talked about, the Herman Millers and Steelcases. But we've also tried to work with some small and medium-sized businesses as well. We just recently worked with a small company out in Hawaii that makes surf wax. They've got a biodegradable surf wax that's cradle-to-cradle. So we're sort of all over the map, but that's intentional because we want this to be across all industries, not just one or two.
Overall, how receptive are manufacturers to your approach?
That's a tough question. Some are very receptive, and some, if they're in a very mature industry, they tend to be a little bit skeptical of doing things differently. So, you know, some manufacturers will embrace it with open arms and say, this is great. Others will say, you know, I don't see the benefit. So we tend to stay away from those and work with the former.
Have you seen any change over time in the receptivity of industry?
Definitely. Definitely. I think, and again, I think industry tends to follow what the customers demand. And as the general consumers become more educated and more aware of these issues, they start to demand those kinds of products from the manufacturers, and they'll follow.
MBDC has a certification program for cradle-to-cradle design products. What are the benefits of certification, and also what criteria are used for certification?
Okay. I think, you know, we're starting to see a proliferation of green labels. There's numerous ones in Europe. There's GreenGuard and GreenSeal and a lot of green labels here in the U.S. So I think the customers are looking for some way to sort of cut through all of what we call greenwashing and get the real deal about why something is green and why something isn't. And that's kind of why we developed our certification program. We feel that it encompasses the material health, reutilization, water, social, and energy components. So it covers all of those categories that other green labels may touch on or may not. So we feel it's the most comprehensive program, as well as the one that goes the deepest. And the criteria are exactly the same as our cradle-to-cradle protocol, so they sort of fit hand in hand.
Who makes the decision about which products deserve certification?
In the end, it's ultimately my call, but it's based on all those criteria that we spoke about earlier related to the cradle-to-cradle protocol. And what we've done is created a certification system that has three levels of achievement. So there's silver, gold, and platinum levels. So it makes it easier for a company to at least get on the right trajectory and get a silver certification and then hopefully improve over time to gold or platinum.
Could you give some examples of products or companies that have gained certification?
Sure. Centria is a company that manufactures exterior building panels. They're foam-filled steel panels that go on the outside of buildings. They've received silver certification for their product. Herman Miller has certified the Mira chair and the Sella chair, two office chairs. Steelcase has certified their Think chair and their Leap chair, again, two other office chairs. We have the SurfWax, I mentioned, is certified. We've got a concrete additive from a company named Hycrete that has been certified. We've got insulating material from Cabot, a large chemical company out of Massachusetts. They've got a nanogel insulating material certified. There's several textiles that have been certified. Victor and Novatex is a Canadian mill. They've got some products certified. Pendleton Woolen Mills out of Oregon has some products certified as well. So there's probably, I guess at this point, maybe two dozen or so products that have earned the cradle-to-cradle certification.
And how recent is your certification program?
We launched it last fall, so it's not even 6 months old.
How widespread overall is the effort to apply cradle-to-cradle design philosophy?
How widespread on our part or from an industry perspective?
Throughout the country, or throughout the world for that matter.
We have a huge advantage in that Bill McDonough is one of the principals, and he's very active as architect and designer, and he's the chairperson of the China-U.S. Center for Sustainable Development, so he's trying to promote this worldwide. And in fact, China has adopted it as a strategy going forward. So, hopefully this will be across all industry and across the world.
Say more about China.
As you know, there's huge development going on there. And Bill McDonough, through his architecture firm, is developing several cities in China, trying to create cradle-to-cradle cities. Now, in order to do that, you need cradle-to-cradle materials, so you need cradle-to-cradle manufacturers. So the idea is to try to bring business to China and get them to do it in the cradle-to-cradle way.
Looking worldwide, which countries seem most receptive to cradle-to-cradle design? China is one, obviously, but where else?
China is one, and certainly the European Union. They are more environmentally savvy probably than any other place in the world. And cradle-to-cradle just seems to make sense to them. They kind of get it right off the bat because they've been thinking this way for several years. But certainly China, you know, it's interesting to see how things are going to develop there because certainly that's where a lot of the manufacturing is headed.
What is your prediction as to how this philosophy will be applied, say, over the next 10 years?
I would hope that we would see most consumer products, so the things that you would buy on a shelf in a Walmart or a Target, designed and carrying the cradle-to-cradle logo. I think it's really important for us that the things that we use every day that we touch and that we see and we smell that are designed this way. You know, we're running out of landfill space. Incineration's not the answer. We really have to rethink the way that we manufacture these products that consumers use on a daily basis. And I think hopefully in the next 10 years, that's where we'll be. I think 10 years from now, you'll walk into a Walmart or a Target and you'll see the cradle-to-cradle logo on almost every product.
What do you think the major challenges are that need to be overcome in terms of people accepting, or manufacturers in particular, accepting the cradle-to-cradle approach?
I think education is a big one, trying to get the message out there that there is a different way to do things. We, MBDC, spun off a nonprofit organization a few years back to help with that education process, but we just needed to duplicate that in as many places as we can to try to get the message out as quickly and as forcefully as possible.
To what extent are other firms, in addition to your own, applying this type of philosophy and helping manufacturers and businesses apply cradle-to-cradle philosophy? Are you the primary ones at this point?
Or? Yeah, right now we are. You know, we really haven't seen a lot of competition in this arena, but we would like to. We welcome it. I mean, I think this idea is bigger than just one organization, and I think hopefully down the road in a few years we'll be able to franchise or license the protocol and certification to other organizations to implement.
I noticed on your website that there was a nonprofit that you had spun off that mm-hmm. promotes cradle-to-cradle design. Could you say a few words about that nonprofit?
Right. That is a Green Blue Institute, and they were spun off, I guess it's been 2 or 3 years now, with really the sole purpose of promoting cradle-to-cradle design throughout the world. And what they've done is they've focused on industry solutions rather than working with an individual company in that industry. So, for example, they've started a sustainable packaging coalition, which has, I believe, up to 70 or so different members at this point. And they're trying to create solutions for packaging as an industry rather than just specific players in that market.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Well, I would like them to first and foremost be aware of cradle-to-cradle design, what it is, what it means. Certainly check out our website for more information, but to start to ask questions about the products that they're buying and start to really understand the things that, you know, that are being put into our world today and the impact that has on not only human health but on our environment as a whole, and start to demand from their manufacturers that they make products in a more responsible way.
Well, thanks so much for being here.
Well, thank you.
We have just been speaking with Jay Bolas, Executive Vice President, Benchmarking and Certification for MBDC, a product and process design firm dedicated to revolutionizing the design of products and services worldwide. For more information, check on the web at www.mbdc.com. Again, that's mbdc.com. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week.